Welcome to Go Space here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. My name's Gary Struble and I chat to the finance ghost every week, catching up on what's going on in the markets here in Southern Africa. Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's start out with an interesting transaction announced this week, and that is Bell being taken private. Now, Bell is still very much a family-owned company, but they've decided to stump up over 700 million rand to take the company off the JSE. Perhaps just give us an idea of what the process for that is and also some of the rationale.
Hi, Gary, and to the listeners. Yeah, this Bell thing has been going on for a long time. And at one point, the Bell family tried to get this thing private with quite a cheeky offer. It was far too cheeky. And unfortunately, it just didn't go through for various reasons. Now they've had to really pay up. It almost feels like the pendulum has swung too far the other way, actually. So the price on the table now is $53 a share. That is a massive premium of 82.3% to the 30-day volume-weighted average price. So they've had to put a big number on the table, as I mentioned. And part of this is because of how small the free float actually is. The Bell family, they hold just over 70% through an entity called IAB, and then another 14.82% across various family holdings. So you've got a scenario where roughly 85% of the shares are basically caught up among the concert parties who are not really going to be able to vote on this thing. So you have a situation where you actually have a very small voting class, and that means one or two smaller shareholders could kind of work together and actually block the trade. So that's going to make it pretty interesting to see if this gets across the line or not. And that's why they've had to put this big number on the table that I think is just so delectable that even the shareholders who could block the deal are going to have to look at this quite seriously and say, you know what, that's not too bad. So it is going through as a scheme of arrangement. I know I keep saying offer, but it's really a scheme of arrangement. And that's why it needs 75% approval among the non-concert parties, for want of a better description. Not an easy thing to get right. I would remind you that Bell traded below $5 a share in the worst of the pandemic. So this thing has been a 10-bagger. If anyone actually got that right and bought at the lowest low and held all the way up, I'd be surprised if anyone did get that right. But either way, it does show you what's possible. And there were many excellent returns on Bell to be made along the way by just buying a good company trading at a really, really low valuation, which is a feature of the local market. Bell is not the only such example.
From a delisting, let's turn our attention now to a recapitalization program. We've been following the Pick and Pay story now for a while. The retailer finds itself in deep water, but it has now released a circular for this recapitalization. Give us some of the highlights.
Yeah, look, I don't have a whole lot of great things to say about Pick and Pay at the moment because it really has just been quite a story for them to actually dig a hole this deep. But yes, the circular is finally out, and this does give us some extra information about the company and what they plan to do with the money, etc. And it really does tell a story of a business that is firmly in turnaround mode, as you might expect. They are, after all, raising 4 billion rand in this rights offer. So that is a lot of money, and it tells you just how much, trouble they're actually in. Now, to try and fix it, it looks like a lot of the turnaround focus is on the way the business is actually structured, literally in terms of the organizational structure and the people involved. So, for example, they've now divided their retail business into 6 regions, not 3. Presumably, this puts the executives closer to the stores in their regions, and perhaps that will make a difference to client service. I guess we'll have to just wait and see. Another thing that they are doing is they are not following what they call a scale at all cost approach. Now, in other words, this means that they're looking at their long tail of stores that are not doing so well, and they won't be shy to either cut those stores or actually turn them into boxes or try and convert them to franchise stores. There was a very interesting comment in the circular about how Pick and Pay franchise stores achieve a much better trading density and sales per store versus their corporate-owned stores. Then they say that this is because the franchisee has a greater focus on in-store operations because basically the owner is right there. Now that for me is such a poor admission of how bad things have gotten at Pick and Pay, because Checkers is a corporate-owned model and so is Woolworths Food. And I suspect that if you went into the street and you asked 100 people where they have a better experience, you'll probably find that the answer is Checkers and Woolies Food. And as I say, those are corporate-owned. So franchise versus corporate-owned is not the problem here. The problem is that Pick and Pay's corporate-owned stores are just quite poor. They've clearly been badly incentivized and badly run for a long time now. And of course, the other thing that I always look for in a circular is the cost of the transaction that the circular is covering. And in this case, the rights offer is coming in at 114 million rand, the bulk of which is actually getting paid to the underwriters, which is typical when you need an underwritten rights offer. It is very expensive. The underwriters don't agree to do this for nothing. Each of the three banks will be making 26.67 million rand to sign on the dotted line to say, if you cannot raise from the market, we will take the rest.
Now, it's often said that it doesn't matter where you operate and at what level of the economy, especially in goods, there's always money at the top. And Richemont have been one of those companies that have often benefited from just how much crazy money can be at the top of the luxury goods sector. But it would appear as if the last while haven't all been going on their own way. And what is happening there? Is money going into other things? Or are the rich people just running out of it?
Richemont is such an interesting one, as is the entire luxury sector, actually. And a few of the names are under pressure at the moment. Go and check out a Burberry chart and you'll see what happens when things just don't look good anymore for luxury. They've really had a bit of a shocker. Richemont is very focused on watches and jewelry, much less so on fashion items, unlike, you know, an LVMH or certainly a Burberry, for example, as mentioned. So you actually have to be quite careful when you are comparing these luxury goods businesses because they don't all have the same underlying product set. Now, Richemont has just released quarterly sales and yeah, they were flat year on year. They pretty much went nowhere. Asia Pacific is actually the issue. So, yeah, this is a good lesson in taking a group number and then digging down into what the segments have done. Because although Richemont itself is flat as a group, there are big moves in the underlying businesses with Asia Pacific down quite heavily and everything else actually looking okay. Problem is that Asia Pacific is the biggest part of the business. So if that's down, it's going to offset a lot of the good stuff somewhere else. Specifically China issues, that's really the main one. And it's difficult to actually forecast these types of businesses, but the market does believe that they will just keep on going. The fact that Richemont could report flat sales and the share price literally just shrugged it off, couldn't care less, really does tell you that the market is super forgiving of these top luxury goods companies. It also tells you that the market is wondering about whether or not there is an LVMH deal coming down the line for Richemont. This is an idea that is thrown around quite often. Like, will it happen? Will we have a situation where the world's leading luxury goods group mops up Richemont? And it would actually make a lot of sense for LVMH to do it, because as I mentioned, LVMH is strong in the fashion side of the business, and they've got some other stuff in there as well. They've got alcohol, they've got cosmetics. But what they don't have enough of really is the jewelry and the watches. So Richemont is actually a brilliant addition to the LVMH stable. And maybe that's part of why the Richemont share price just didn't care too much about the sales update. But for me, Richemont is an expensive company, never mind the underlying goods, and it needs to still grow. So not one that I am invested in right now. And I think something that is worth keeping an eye on as part of the broader luxury goods sector, because yes, the people at the top never really seem to run out of money, but that doesn't always mean that they are spending it with your luxury goods company of choice.
All right, thanks, Gust. Let's leave it there and we'll let you off to your ghostly wanderings. We'll chat to you again next week right here on Ghost Biz on the Business Report on Nova 103.5.